Good evening. Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash, and later on Building Bridges, Radio City Rockettes wouldn't kick as high without live music for the holidays.
But first, a ghoulish employers exploit Halloween costume workers with Jorge Perez Ibarra, organizer of Guardería Obrera Union in Mexico. Costume factory workers, some as young as 13 years old in Hidalgo, Mexico, who frequently suffered serious puncture wounds from faulty sewing machine needles and work in roach-infested shops, were subject to forced pregnancy tests and overtime work without pay, and they formed a union to better the conditions of their labor. But the response of these workers who produce Halloween and other costumes for Ruby's, Mattel, Barbie's products, and Warner Brothers' Harry Potter and Star Wars labels was to lock them out rather than to recognize the workers' demands. And now we go to Hidalgo, Mexico with Jorge Perez Ibarra. Jorge, the workers, what's the nature of the work and what are they making?
Sí, lo estaban produciendo disfraces para niños, niñas de Argentina y Estados Unidos.
The workers at the Ruby's plant were producing costumes for basically children in the United States. And these were costumes with Barbie, Harry Potter, Generic Witch, and other Halloween brands and logos. And these were basically costumes designed for kids in the United States between the ages of 6, maybe 12, or even up to 15 years old. In this case, the workers were making these costume garments for U.S. kids, though the kids actually making the garments in Mexico were kids of roughly the same age as the ones who would end up buying them in the United States. The difference is, in Mexico, these children, even though they're producing the costumes, don't have the economic means even to buy a Barbie doll.
Jorge, can you tell us the conditions under which the workers labor in the state of Hidalgo in the costume factory?
Es mal comedor, accidentes de trabajo, mal pago de tiempo extra, y mi maltrato de la encargada de la empresa. En el caso del
poor sanitary conditions in the cafeteria, poor pay and overtime conditions, poor treatment by the supervisor of the factory, and underage workers. The supervisors are treating poorly all the workers, especially the underage or child workers. Specifically, they force them to carry heavy rolls of fabric, over 100 pounds per roll of fabric. The majority of the underage workers were seamstresses in the factory. One of the workers, the youngest, was a general helper. He was the one that was forced to carry the heavy rolls of fabric. Others had to also carry heavy rolls of fabric and otherwise do other quite heavy and difficult jobs at the factory. The workers had between 13, 14, 15, and 16 years of age. The majority were between 14 and 15 years of age. In total at the factory, there were 12 workers that were under the legal working age here in Mexico. In the factory, there was often pregnant women, and in the cases of the pregnant woman and the other workers, they would ask, when they weren't having to sew, to paint the bathrooms and other parts of the factory. But when they had to do this, they were asked to paint with paint thinners that were very noxious for the workers, especially for the pregnant workers, and they would often faint or pass out from the smells and the heat at the factory. Also, when the seamstresses at the factory, for example, when they were using a sewing machine, would puncture a finger with one of the needles from the sewing machine, instead of sending them to Mexican state-funded Social Security Institute, which is required of all factories, that they would simply ask the mechanic at the factory to take a pair of pliers and remove the needle from the worker's finger, put a Band-Aid on it, and then ask them to continue working. This is the conditions that are very frequent at this and other factories in Tepeji del Rio.
And why are there 12 and 13 and 14-year-old children that are forced to work in these factories?
Mucha madre soltera ahí en Tepeji del Río, inclusive nos encontramos cuatro de las mamás de sus niños, vivían nomás con sus hijos y algunos estaban en
Tepeji del Río. There are a lot of single mothers. The specifically some of the underage workers at this factory, four of them had mothers that were single mothers. Because of the economic necessity in the family, the kids had to go work at an early age to support the family. In many cases, because of the maquila and factory situation, Tepeji del Rio, they don't accept people beyond a certain age. And so many of these mothers were actually beyond the age that were being accepted to work at the factories. Therefore, their kids were the only ones that met the age requirement, which was very young, to go ahead and work in the factories. So basically, it was a result of economic necessity on the part of the families in Tepeji del Rio. When the workers would ask for work at the factory, the head of the factory, the administrator, would ask the workers to present her with copies of the workers' birth certificates, at which time she would take photocopies of the workers' birth certificates and alter the birth dates of the workers to make them seem like they're between 17 and 18 years of age, when in reality they were 13, 14, and 15-year-old workers. So I would like to add something about the forced overtime at the factory.
En el caso del tiempo extra, el horario normal que trabajaba la empresa era de 7 de la mañana a 16:30.
The normal working hour at the factory from 7 o'clock in the morning till 4:30 in the afternoon. However, the head of the factory, the administrator, a woman named Delia Mendoza, had other maquiladoras to Tepeji del Rio, where she would send or subcontract the product that was supposed to be made at the factory, the Ruby's factory, to some of these other sub-maquilas, as they're called in Mexico. These are sub-maquilas or other factories where the working conditions as well as the quality of the product are much less or inferior to the actual Ruby's factory. In many cases, products would be sent to these other factories, be produced under bad conditions, and be returned to the main factory, Ruby's, poorly done, or in many cases with many errors or mistakes in the sewing. So as a result, the Ruby's factory would obligate the workers, especially the underage workers, to work forced overtime and to make up for the corrections and the mistakes that were found from the products from these other sub-maquilas. In Mexico, for a worker between 14 and 15 years old, they cannot work more than 6 hours per day. In this case, the workers were being forced to work many times 12 to 14 hours per day to make up for the mistakes of these sub-maquilas, and they were not paid the legally required double time, which is what's required for overtime. They were simply paid at straight time. So instead of having to leave the factory around 4:30 in the afternoon, they would often leave anywhere from 10 o'clock at night till 1 o'clock in the morning, which would present security problems for the workers, because to leave a dark factory that late in the city with no street lights presented very scary conditions for younger underage workers who had to return home that late at night.
Jorge, what is your job in the factory, and how did you get involved in the organizing of the union?
Bien, yo no trabajo en la empresa. La gente se no tenía sindicato, no estaban muy maltratados por parte de la empresa.
I don't actually work in the factory. What happened is that at the Ruby's factory, early this year in 2005, the children were being mistreated and exploited, as were the other workers at the factory. So our union has an office in Tepeji del Rio. What happened is when these workers were upset with their working conditions and decided to form a union, they came looking for us at the union office and asked me to help them organize a union and resolve the problem factory. So I did, and as a result of advocating for them against the mistreatment that was taking place specifically from the supervisors at the factory, that was the main incentive why the workers came looking for us to help them organize a union and address their working conditions.
You were successful in forming a union, and there was a collective bargaining agreement. What has the management done now? Have they observed, or are they flaunting that agreement?
Efectivamente, un contrato firmado por parte de la empresa se firmó el 11 de mayo.
Yes, effectively, we did have a collective bargaining agreement that was signed between the union on behalf of the workers and the company. This was signed on May 11th, 2005. What happened after that was, once the contract was legally deposited with the Federal Labor Board in Mexico City, the Federal Labor Board declared itself incompetent to be able to receive the contract and decide which union in Mexico had the legal right to the collective bargaining agreement, because the lawyer, last name Bonifaz, decided that she wasn't going to respect the agreement because another union at the time, one known in Mexico as a protection contract union, intervened saying they already had the rights to the collective bargaining agreement. And because Licenciada Bonifaz and the protection contract union had already established an agreement to prevent the workers from having a real union at the factory, therefore, even though we did sign a collective bargaining agreement, it's since been denied.
The CTM, what is called the, quote, official union, end quote, has ties to the government. Do you see collusion here between the government, that union, and the employer?
Sí, en el estado de Hidalgo, el sindicato, la CTM, tiene muchos contratos firmados. Pero la mayoría es
in the state of Hidalgo, where the factory is located, this specific CTM union has many signed collective bargaining agreements. However, they're all the style that we call protection contract or white unions in Mexico, or company unions, as they might call it in other countries. In this case, many people, not only the Rubies factory, but other factories in the state, complain of the CTM and their leader, Adolfo Gatt, because they understand that he's very politically connected at the state level in Hidalgo, as well as at the federal level with the Federal Labor Board in Mexico City. In the specific case of Rubies, it's been alleged that Licenciada Bonifaz from the Federal Labor Board, as well as Adolfo Gatt, agreed on a certain type of relationship that would prevent our union from being able to take over the collective bargaining rights at the factory and effectively deny workers true representation.
And what is the state of the workers now? Are they still working in the factory? Are they on strike? What's happening right now?
La otra, la gente está fuera de la empresa, fueron liquidados. Lógicamente, estuvieron en la...
What happens is when this conflict began, 62 of the 80 workers at the factory, the ones that affiliated with our union, were laid off after 13 or 14 weeks outside the factory in virtual strike conditions with signs and regular protest displays outside the factory against what was taking place. The workers, because of economic need, because of the expenses that they had still pending in their houses, saw themselves in the need to accept a certain form of severance pay to be able to continue living and making ends meet. So many of the workers at this time, after 13 weeks of virtual strike conditions outside the factory, decided to accept their severance pay. Though to date, six of those workers have still not accepted their severance pay and are actively seeking their reinstatement at the factory. Though I want to mention that of the 62 workers that were initially fired, all of them still would like to work at the factory one day. It's just that legally, some of them have had to accept their severance pay because of economic need.
I understand that you have picked up allies on behalf of the worker in the various communities and proactive labor groups in this country. In effect, those Halloween costumes are scarier than many people even realize unless they think about how they're made. So who are the companies and what needs to be done to receive justice for the workers?
Barbie, Mattel, and Brother. Son las marcas que se manejan aquí en la empresa y se mandan para Estados Unidos.
At the factory, there's Barbie, which is a Mattel product line, and Warner Brothers. Two main brands being produced at the factory are Mattel costumes and Warner Brothers costumes.
And what are the demands, and are people here taking up those demands as well?
Sí, lo único que exigen los trabajadores es buen trato, que se les pague.
Yes, the demands that the workers have principally are that they will be treated well and that they'll be paid better than they were initially once they're reinstated to the factory. As a result of this, we want to ensure that there's a real union, in this case our union, that can represent the workers and achieve justice for all of the violations they've experienced through a collective bargaining agreement.
What are some of those costumes? And also, are these exclusively for Halloween? When Halloween is over, will they be doing it for other holidays or other occasions?
Harry Potter, Star Wars, son las que producen. Y después de...
Harry Potter and Star Wars are the two main Time Warner costumes that were being made at the factory, which are Warner Brothers costumes. Once Halloween's over, however, then comes the time of year when they're going to be producing costumes and other outfits for Santa Claus and other Christmas-related outfits. Then later in February comes Valentine's Day, and the costumes and other outfits that are produced for that time of year. Basically, the company has a strategy where all year round, there's constant work producing for these different days or holidays in the United States.
And whether we're going to be an Easter Bunny, a Santa Claus, a Harry Potter, or whatever our fantasy, what do we have to do here to support these workers? I understand one of the things was picketing targets to get them to pressure for better factory conditions.
No, lo que queremos es presionar algunas tiendas de ahí de Estados Unidos para que no le compren a Rubies, ¿sí?
What we would like to ask of people in the United States is that they continue putting pressure on the major stores in the United States that sell the Rubis costumes. If Rubis doesn't want to respect workers' rights in Mexico and negotiate a collective bargaining agreement with the workers, then we would ask those stores to stop carrying the products that they're selling currently with the Rubis label. In addition to that, we, of course, are asking consumers to send letters as well as do media events, as well as contact Time Warner through the website that we have, so they can take pressure on Time Warner as well as Mattel to pressure Rubis to do the right thing in this case. Also, example of this radio interview, it's very important that both the radio, television, and written media in the United States write about the children in Mexico that are being exploited at the time of Halloween and take into account that if it wasn't for these kind of working conditions in Mexico, this year perhaps there wouldn't be as many Halloween costumes in the United States with the Rubis label. In addition to this, well, it's important for us that Mexican workers, specifically at Rubis, have real worker justice, improved salaries, and a true voice so they can achieve a collective bargaining agreement. All of these are messages we would like to get to the U.S. consumers. Yes, one other thing I would like to mention is that recently we went to the United States and filed a complaint against the government of Mexico and against Rubis under the North American Agreement on Labor Cooperation, which is the NAFTA Labor Side Accord.
And the website that people can go to find out more and also to find out who to contact to protest.
Se llama laborstar.org/TGI.
The direction for the website is www.laborstart.org or laborstart.org. Once you go to that website, you can go to the link for Time Warner Exploits Child Labor in Mexico. And from there, one can send protest letters to the CEO and chairman of Time Warner, as well as to Mark Beige, who is the president of the Rubis Costume Company based in New York City.
So if you really want to be a good Harry Potter or Easter Bunny or Santa Claus, then you have to pressure Rubis to do right by the workers who make the costumes.
Sí, es lo que queremos, de que si un disfraz es caro, pues...
Exactly. What we're asking is that if expensive Halloween costumes are being sold in the United States, and they're being sold with the exploitation of workers and children here in Mexico, or any other country for that matter, we would ask that at the very minimum, the workers who make the costumes are paid a living wage and have true worker justice at their factories. I would like to thank you very much for taking the time to do this radio interview. This is going to be very important for us. Once again, thank you very much for everything. We sincerely appreciate your help and encouragement.
Muchas gracias por todo, Jorge Perez of the Vanguardia Obrera, and our translator, Benjamin Cocalet from the Solidarity Center of the AFL-CIO in Mexico.
November 3rd, Cablevision Management locked out the musicians of the Radio City Music Hall on the first day of the Christmas Spectacular. The previous day, the union had come prepared to sign a new contract agreement, but then Cablevision withdrew their offer without warning. Local 802 then made an unconditional offer to continue working while negotiations continued, but Cablevision refused and is running the show using canned music.
Hundreds of supporters joined Local 802 members, elected officials, and union leaders to rally in support of the musicians of the renowned Radio City Orchestra outside of Radio City Music Hall. Cablevision, the multi-billion dollar corporation, wants to cut the musicians' pay for the world-famous Christmas Spectacular. Meanwhile, they continue to raise ticket prices and reap millions in annual profits. Cablevision now plans to rip off the public by using canned music, and Ken Nash was there.
And at the night of the rally, the union came with their 30-foot rat but Cablevision had put a much larger, snarling wild cat above the marquee of Radio City Music Hall with a sign accusing Local 802 of being greedy and strike happy. So let's see how that all played out at Radio City Music Hall recently.
My name is David Lennon. I'm president of Local 802. I want to direct your attention to the grotesque mockery of the holiday season in New York that Cablevision is boldly and shamefully displaying on the marquee of the Radio City Music Hall. Boo! Cablevision, think that we are intimidated by that fat cat. A multi-billion dollar corporate employer will try to pass off the performing artists as the greedy ones? For well over 75 years, the Radio City Orchestra has graced the stage here in the Christmas Spectacular. This orchestra has proudly played alongside the Rockettes on stage. They are part of this show. All of that is threatened now because of Cablevision. The hundreds of people you see here are here for one reason, to support the Radio City Orchestra and protect the Christmas Spectacular from its greedy owner. From the beginning of these negotiations, Cablevision has over and over again insisted on shortchanging the Radio City musicians, despite the fact that their talent and their skill, along with the other great artists on stage, have been raking in over $75 million a year in profits. The musicians are the greedy ones? No! They want musicians to work more than 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, to not pay them to do so. They tried unsuccessfully to deceive musicians devastated by Hurricane Katrina into unwittingly scabbing this orchestra. When Louisiana's musicians learned of Cablevision's deception, they immediately stood by their brothers and sisters in New York and rejected Cablevision's attempt to exploit their tragedy. This corporate giant, charging up to $250 per ticket, is threatening to use tape music in the Radio City Christmas Spectacular, and they think people won't notice. When people from across the country and across the world come to see the Radio City Christmas Spectacular, they aren't coming to listen to a tape. The musicians are an integral and irreplaceable part of this New York City holiday tradition. I'm proud to introduce New York City Councilmember Christine Quinn.
Day, who have studied for years to master their trade, whether they are going to get a fair contract. We're not talking about whether you're going to get another yacht or whether you're going to get another foreign sports car, which are the kind of choices and decisions the Dolans get to make. We're talking about whether you're going to have the basic money you need to keep you and your family alive in this city. It is outrageous that the Dolans are looking to put more money in their own pocket when they have a lot already at you and your family's expense. Just like we prevailed on Broadway, we will prevail here because New Yorkers are smart And when New Yorkers spend their money on a Broadway ticket or they bring their family here for the Christmas spectacular, they want what their money is paying for. And a huge part of what their money pays for on Broadway and here at Radio City is live music. Yeah. Not a tape, not a CD. And if the Dolans continue, what they will see is no one will want to come. Tomorrow at the City Council, myself and Speaker Gifford Miller are going to circulate a letter to all of our colleagues expressing our outrage to Jim Dolan about this situation. And I'm confident that we will have a majority of the council members' signatures on that letter. And if this continues, we'll bring it right down to City Hall, call the Dolans down, and bring it all right into the People's Chamber at City Hall. You have the full support of your elected city representatives. We will win here at Radio City and not let people rip New Yorkers off with an attempt to fake them out with tape music. So keep the struggle going, and we'll be successful.
Thank you, Christine. If the Radio City Christmas show is destroyed this year, who will be the Grinch that stole Christmas from New York? Cablevision! What do we want? When do we want it? What do we want? When do we want it? Call CEO of Cablevision, Jim Dolan, at 516-803-1002, 516-803-1002, and tell him to put the Radio City Orchestra back in Radio City Music Hall and give them a fair contract.
You are listening to the support network that's been built up to support live music, in this instance for the Radio City Orchestra musicians who must be there to play. No canned music, a decent contract, a decent wage.
This has been a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special